Today, we have Dr. Kevin Preston joining us today. He is a practitioner of Chinese medicine and was drawn to this holistic approach after experiencing the effectiveness of acupuncture in treating his knee injury. He believes that Chinese medicine offers individualized treatments based on a person's unique history, genetics, and lifestyle. However, Chinese medicine has faced resistance in Western cultures due to the fear of the foreign and unfamiliar. Kevin sees common issues in his practice, such as fatigue, inflammation, autoimmune condition, and toxicity. He uses a combination of deductive reasoning, intuition, and active listening to understand the root cause of a person's symptoms and develop a treatment plan. In this conversation, Dr. Kevin Preston discusses the impact of medications on the body and the importance of addressing the root cause of health issues. He explains how anti-inflammatory medications can damage the gut flora and microbiome, leading to a decline in overall health. He emphasizes the need to slow down, take inventory of your life, and be open to change. We also discuss his upcoming event, The New Human Regeneration, and the power of immersive healing experiences. This is a great conversation. I really love Dr. Kevin's work. I was really intrigued by Chinese medicine, and I've never, out of the hundreds and hundreds of episodes that we've had, have ever talked about Chinese medicine. And honestly, I love how it's about the root cause. You know what I mean? Like, let's figure out the human. Let's figure out what they've been through and get to the root of it. And this is a great conversation. I really, really enjoyed it. And I love his work. So, yeah, guys, make sure if you aren't subscribed to the podcast yet, go ahead and do so. And if you find value from it, share it with somebody you feel like needs it. And of course, if you got value and you want to do it, which I always appreciate, leave us a review wherever you listen to this. All right, let's get into this conversation with Dr. Kevin Preston. If you had to describe Chinese medicine to an 8-year-old, how would you describe it?
I'm gonna reach into the vault with some of my teachers for this one. And one of the first things I learned when I got into school was they said Chinese medicine views the body as a garden, and Western medicine views the body as a machine. And so the health and wellness of the whole ecosystem and the totality of that is everything. How's your soil? How's the sunlight? Is there enough water? And it really reframed my sort of Western scientific trained mind to look at the body in a completely different way. And 8-year-olds, especially those that have grown up gardening or on a farm or anything like that, like they inherently already know that you need to pull the weeds and you need to tend to what you're trying to produce in the garden. And I feel like that would be the analogy I'd go to. And it works for adults too. I mean, it worked for me as an adult at the time of, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All of this is so interconnected. There's nothing that is separate in a garden set, in a greenhouse or anything like that. The humidity is important. The environment inside is everything.
Well, how did you, what was the initial pull to this path? Like, what was it like for you growing up? Was there something that you felt like intuitively that you connected to different things like that? Or was it sort of just an evolution? Like, how did you even, how is this the path that you chose? Because it's so fascinating to me how people come into what they do, and then the way you do it and how you're showing up right now and what you're creating. You know, you're really stepping into it, and it's powerful because there's a lot of misconceptions about Chinese medicine, you know? And I think it's so important. I love seeing someone like yourself like really just bring that more into the forefront and really show people that this is actually something that can change your life completely. but you don't hear about it enough. So I'm just curious, like, what did that path look like for you? Like, how did that even, you know, what was that?
I've definitely had that curiosity from, like, even patients of mine. This woman who was born and raised in China years ago came in to see me, and, you know, I come up to the front and she says, "Where's the doctor?" And, you know, thinking I was likely Asian, and I'm not. And we get into the treatment room. She's got a confused look on her face of like, "But you're white, you know, you're not Chinese." And I said, "Yes, that's true." And then we got into this conversation about how I came to be there, because it was really odd to her that a Caucasian farm kid from Alberta would be a doctor of Chinese medicine. And so I think in many ways, maybe like our destiny is, it finds us whether we want it to or not in some ways. And I have a background in playing hockey. I played junior and college hockey, and I also had a history of really blowing out my right knee over and over again. So by the fifth time, you know, another surgery, post-surgery, I was actually a student already. I was in, I played a year of college hockey, and then I blew my knee out right at the end of the season. And I started getting acupuncture on my knee after surgery. And my knee was super swollen, painful, you know, all the things that go with a fairly intensive surgery. And I got acupuncture probably within a week or 2 weeks post. And one session took away probably like 20% of the swelling. And I remember looking down thinking, what the hell is going on there? Like, it just felt like somebody relieved the pressure. It wasn't as dark or red, you know, that purple, like kind of pain swelling. It felt temperature wise, it was less. And the swelling was noticeable. Like, I visibly could see it because I laid down. And when I sat up after treatment, I looked and I could see the outlines of my kneecap again, and I couldn't because it was so swollen. Wow. So I remember that moment whenever I feel into the history here of that connected with me, because I'm a very practical, pragmatic, like results. You know, I grew up working on farms, and you have to find solutions. You can't just leave the cows out of the fence, you know, you have to find a way to get them back, and you have to repair the fence. And it doesn't matter how long it takes you, you can't just leave loose ends. So I think that really installed in me a results focused mentality. And so when I see something that gets results, the way my mind works, I'm also very curious. I wanted to know, how did that happen? You stuck some little tiny needles in my knee and now it feels way better. That was my experience. And so I stayed with treatment and I recovered way faster. And when I went to see my surgeon for follow-up, he said, "I don't know what you've been doing, but you're way further, like twice as far as anybody I've ever seen with what I did to your knee on the pathway of recovery. So I don't even have anything to say to you. Just keep on whatever it is." And I, you know, was doing a lot of acupuncture and I was really working at it. So that stuck with me. And I was in the moment of, you know, being in school, I was taking science, and I wasn't really sure what my pathway was. I thought maybe I was going to go into sports medicine. My mom was a nurse. I was in sport of all kinds. I was in track and field. I was in everything I could get my hands on. Hockey was the main one. I got to meet some really cool high level sports doctors for Team Canada and things back when I was a teenager. My brothers and I, we all played. And I thought it was cool. Hey, if I don't make the NHL, the doctor side of this seems pretty awesome as well, because I'm going to still be in this world that I was so passionate about. So I was taking steps to go in that direction. And then after the acupuncture experience, I started pumping the brakes a little bit. Like, is that what I want to do? And acupuncture, the curiosity just got to me, I think. And I started reading books about Chinese medicine. And honestly, some of those books were game changers when I got into understanding the philosophy, because I didn't know really what was underneath it. I just know what I experienced and what I saw. And then I started trying to understand it. And the more I understood, the more I read, it just connected with me on such a deep level. It made sense. Like, if you had 10 patients with migraines, the treatment you would do for each of those patients is completely different. Whereas Western medicine would often prescribe the same medication, and it wouldn't really matter what their life history was, where they came from, what their genetic background was, what their lineage was, or how many injuries they had. It's just, hey, you have a symptom, here's a medication for that, and you'd carry on. Whereas in Chinese medicine, it's so individualized. So I'd be asking questions, which I understand now. And, you know, especially from being an athlete, hey, have you had a lot of concussions? And I'm like, yep. Then I know that there's, you know, trauma there. There's brain trauma. There's inflammation in the brain from mechanical force. Mm-hmm. Whereas maybe somebody else has never played a sport in their life. And it's from eye strain because they're on a computer 24/7 and they don't really eat well and they're not, you know, taking a good nutrients and their eyes are actually getting a poor blood flow. And maybe that's all they need. So it's not a trauma in the same way. And so, of course, you would tailor completely different treatment. And so I think those ideas and philosophy is what really pulled me in the beginning, because it just seemed like it just made sense. Like it just was common sense. Of course, you would try and find out what's going on with this individual. And you would, you know, you would speak to that because everybody lives their life differently. We have different genetics. We have different patterns. You know, we have different things that are going to emerge. We have different jobs and interests. And all of that is actually really relevant. So I think going back to childhood, spent a lot of time in nature. I love the natural world. I was around animals a lot. I almost went into to vet medicine. I thought maybe working with animals was a pathway. And, you know, there was like medicine around in my field. And some of the neighbors I grew up with, their moms were nurses. And one of them, he was a veterinarian. And so I got to work with animals with them. And just that environment, when I look back, I can see how it was shaping me, even though it was still kind of a big leap. Nobody was doing acupuncture. I didn't grow up with Chinese medicine. We didn't have a very multicultural neighborhood at all. So it found me through injury, essentially. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know you played hockey. I played hockey too. So immediately I was like, oh shit. Like imagine having that in junior hockey. Where did you play junior?
I played in Red Deer and I actually played college hockey in Red Deer as well.
Did you play Dub?
No, I was junior A for a little while there, bounced around in junior B, but I also kept injuring my knee. You know, right. I start the season 8 games in, you know, leading scorer, and then out for the year. And
oh, yeah.
Okay, let's try this again. And by that time, you know, I was getting into, you know, 19, 20 years old. And yeah. So when I played college hockey, I think I was actually one of the youngest on my team because I was already in that state of, am I actually going to continue playing? What's going on with these injuries? And starting to get the point of, is this the direction? Like that's, right. It's kind of starting to suck. I wanted to, you know, make sure I was educating myself or keeping my options open, but I love the game. You know, I love the game, and fate had a different plan because, you know, by that time, I think I was 20. Then I blew my knee out again. And so I was playing college hockey at 20, 21, right in there, I think. And, you know, most of the guys had already played East Coast or WHL and loving the game still and maybe still trying to make it a career, but also maybe thinking, hey, I better get my options open. So we had tremendous players on my team. And I was still able to play, which was great. But even after the year of college I played in Red Deer, I blew my knee out again at the end of the season. And, you know, when the universe is giving you repeated messages, even for me back then, I think I was pretty stubborn of I wasn't really getting it, but it was trying to push me in a different direction.
Yeah. And I think about that world and just like Chinese medicine so foreign to hockey players, but could be so helpful.
So helpful.
Right?
Like, oh man.
Think back. Like I remember, you know, I separated my shoulder. I sprained my ankle playing, you know, I was playing junior A in BCHL. And back then I was given that Vioxx stuff, which is like banned now.
I got pulled off the market.
Right. So but that was like the level of, you know, this was early 2000s as well, right? And I think that's all they knew. The trainers were just doing the best they could. But I think about athletes and just how much better and how much the recovery would have been for myself and many others if we had those options. But it was just sort of like, oh, that's bullshit or whatever. And I wonder where the disconnect came from. Like, why isn't that stuff? Maybe it's more accepted now in sports. I think people are becoming more open-minded. But yeah. Like, where did we go wrong? Like, where, like, is it the drug companies? Is it the medical system? Like, where, for people that are confused, like, I don't understand it, because if we want to solve the problem, we got to get to the root of it, not just put a Band-Aid on it. And now that makes sense to me, but it's still, people still don't seem to want to get out of that. I got to take this for that. And then I get this, and then it brings on this symptom. It's like, well, why don't we figure out the root cause? And, and as athletes, it's like, man, if we had that, how much better would we have been? Like, where did the disconnect come from?
I've often asked myself that question. And had I understood what I understand now back then, maybe I could have avoided some surgeries. And even just from a mentally emotional point of view, acupuncture and Chinese medicine is really powerful for that. Yeah. You can treat almost anything. And so what I think is a possibility, especially in North America, because that's all I can speak to. I was born in Canada, you know, I was born in Alberta. I grew up there. That I've noticed this thing in our society in general in North America, we fear that which is foreign. So that was something that probably was steeped very real through like World War II. And, you know, you're at war with Japan. So just as an example, I can imagine, you know, people that grew up through that era, our grandparents and things like that, you start seeing others as the enemy. So if they had, you know, Japanese has acupuncture as well. If there's a Eastern culture, Eastern thought and philosophy, that could be seen as the enemy. So you would not want to take on anything that's, you know, outside of your regular thought process of what you've been taught. And I think in North America here, we're relatively young population from a colonialist point of view. Anyway, there's certainly indigenous here for thousands and thousands of years. But if we look at Chinese medicine, it's been around for over 5,000 years. You know, nobody even knows actually how long it is, but they have documents from that long ago speaking about meridians and Chinese medicine. So it's in their culture. And it would have been at times in the Chinese culture more foreign to use drugs and medication and try and cover up illness or suppress, you know, symptoms in the body. That would have been seen of like, well, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just treat the root issue? So we haven't had that level of history in our culture here. And it is a lot more now with you know, people from all over the world living in Canada, then we got exposure to these things. You know, I'm sure at some point, at some, you know, decade long gone time frame now, there was, you know, Chinese influence that came to Canada and started practicing acupuncture. And it might have been seen as really foreign because it was like it was new. You know, if nobody was practicing that here, it would be seen as, you know, odd or use herbs of, you know, of animals and like, what is that? And so it would be really easy to kind of push that to the margins if we didn't grow up with it. And I've thought about this, you know, even with religion. If you grew up in a certain part of the world, in a certain, you know, denomination of whatever the religion was or the prevailing religion of your family or the region, then you would often take on those thoughts and beliefs. And it would only be and you've had a different experience or you move somewhere different. And especially in our world now, you know, you can live anywhere, kind of go anywhere. So there's a lot more cross-pollination of culture, thoughts, medicine, you know, you can go live in different countries and immerse yourself in their culture. And you're going to learn a lot, you know, of new information compared to maybe, you know, in my case, where I grew up as rural Alberta. So at the time, there was virtually no Asian influence, there was no real alternative medicine, or if there was, I didn't know those people. So it was new. So I think a new concept can take quite a while to adopt. Even though Chinese medicine is not new at all, it was new for a lot of us. And you have to be really curious and open-minded enough to ask questions and follow that through. So it was a pretty good leap. You know, I think a lot of people in my life at the time were confused about why I was going to do that. And, oh, you're going to move out of Alberta and you're going to go to Vancouver to take Chinese medicine from Chinese people. All the teachers I had were born and raised in China and became doctors there. So, and yeah, it was a leap. I did feel like I was diving into the unknown completely. And it took sort of an undoing of some of my thoughts and beliefs to be able to actually make space for things that were new that actually did make sense. But you could still feel the mind's pathways of resistance. You know, we often have resistance to new thought. It's an interesting thing as a human. We create our box and our comfortability, and then anything that might threaten that could feel kind of, you know, scary or dangerous, and we might try and push it away until we have an experience maybe that changes something. You know, I had friends that were from all countries in my program, which was the thing I needed, actually. I didn't have people in my life as friends where I was growing up that were from different places and spoke different languages. You know, it was all fairly similar. So when I got to Chinese medicine school, there were students from Iran and Australia and Mexico and Korea and Japan and China, and all of them spoke often two or three languages, and I felt very inadequate of, oh man, I feel kind of dumb. I only speak one language and I don't even know what's happening right now. And then I started realizing how sheltered and how beautiful I grew up. You know, I was in the woods and fishing and hunting and in the forest, and I loved it. I loved everything about my childhood. I have no regrets, but I could also see the small-mindedness that I hadn't really broken out of because I didn't have exposure to the rest of the world.
So, okay, to break it down, like, let's say I've never actually had acupuncture, but like, if somebody is curious as to like what the meridian points are in acupuncture, walk us through. Yeah. Is that pretty much the main thing that is done is acupuncture? Like, is that, can you kind of explain to people and like what is happening in that and maybe why somebody would want to do that? Cause I
think absolutely.
People hear the words, but like, I kind of want to break it down just to make it kind of simple for people to understand.
Well, and even just sort of dovetailing what we just spoke about, previous Olympics, you know, this year, but even, you know, 4 years ago and 4 years before that, Michael Phelps kind of made cupping famous in a way. Because if we look at the umbrella of Chinese medicine, it's an umbrella. Acupuncture is the most well-known associated Chinese medicine modality. But there's more. So in school, under the umbrella of Chinese medicine, acupuncture was a big component. Herbology, like herbal medicine, is as big or bigger of a component of traditional Chinese medicine. And there's other modalities like cupping, moxa, it's where you're burning herbs and, you know, you're heating up acupuncture points. You're not burning somebody. You know, there's different techniques. But Michael Phelps showed up at the Olympics, you know, being the champion of champions with these like circle bruises on his shoulders and things. And a lot of people were like, what's that? That's Chinese medicine cupping. And that's been adopted in lots of modalities in physical therapy and athletic therapy and everything else because it works really well. But a lot of the basis of that came from Chinese medicine. And so even just seeing like a pro athlete at an Olympic level, especially back then being an Olympian, and decorated and effective. If you see somebody like that doing something like that, then everybody who's interested is like, well, maybe I want to get some cupping. What's that? And suddenly around the time, everybody was asking me about cupping and referencing Michael Phelps because nobody really understood. I'm like, oh yeah, that's been around for thousands of years in Chinese medicine, but it seems so new and different. And what's this new technology he's using to dominate everybody? It's actually a thousands of years old technology that you can apply to the body, move blood flow, clear pain, decrease inflammation, increase range of motion. It's incredible. So yeah, acupuncture, very commonly used in Chinese medicine. Herbal medicine, very commonly used, and some of the other, you know, I guess, add-on techniques, if we call it, you know, cupping and some of these things. So if somebody comes in to see me, or and especially in the past, because I don't do acupuncture much anymore, I kind of specialize more in toxicity and testing and cellular levels of the body with all the Chinese medicine philosophy and experience. But for the early parts of my career, I did thousands and thousands of treatments of acupuncture. And so in a lot of cases, they were new. They never had treatment before. They never had acupuncture before. So I got a lot of practice communicating with them, especially with my experience. It was super foreign to me at one point. And all I would say is we're regulating your body's ability to function by tapping into these very specific points called acupuncture points that I always viewed as little nodes of regulation of the system. And I've often viewed the meridian network of the body, it's just a map of the system of all the connection of all the organs, of all the tissue, the muscles, the bones, the ligaments, the eyes, the sense organs, like everything is interconnected through the meridian system, that you're choosing these little special nodes on that network to adjust the flow of energy, to adjust the flow. You know, when you talk about chi, it's vital force energy. It's what makes our bodies move. It's what pumps the blood. It's what animates our system. You know, what makes the heartbeat? It's energy. And so I think even that concept had been kind of foreign. It's like, well, what do you mean energy? That sounds kind of fluffy. And much less now than 20 years ago, yeah, having that conversation has definitely changed. Yeah. And I can only imagine for the practitioners 20, 40 years before me, how different it was, because I started this journey almost 20 years ago. So the communication's changed. Alternative medicine is widely accepted now. People are using any number of modalities, herbs and supplements and all kinds of things, and acupuncture very widely now, because it has had time to steep into our culture a bit more. But that's typically what I would say, is we're just helping your body function at its highest level. And if something's stuck or blocked through injury or mental emotional aspects or any number of things, we're going to use these points to help open that flow again. If things are flowing in the body, it's good. If it's not flowing in the body, that's not good. And, you know, for basics, we understand circulation. You know, if you have varicose veins or there's a circulatory block in the heart or something, like, we understand that. Oh, that's not good, right? So you're getting blood flow going, you're getting energy flow going. And it turns out using little tiny needles at the right places on the body will greatly impact the function of the whole system. It's pretty magical. I'm not going to lie. I'm still blown away by it after, you know, 20 years, that somebody can walk in with a splitting headache and I could do a point on the hands or the feet, and within a few minutes, that headache might be disappeared completely. And they might be wondering, how was that possible? It's that things became stuck and I got them unstuck. That's the most basic way to look at it.
What do you see as the most common problem people face now when they come in? Is it inflammation? Is it poisoning, toxic poisoning from things? Like, what seems to be the most common thing that you're dealing with these days?
I think from, if we speak to the symptom picture first, a lot of people are fatigued. A lot of people are tired. They don't have the energy. They don't have the vitality that they could. And there is a lot of inflammatory conditions going on. And that's a big umbrella. And I'll plug in, like, autoimmune conditions skyrocketing the last few years, and for a lot of years, but a big uptick the last 4 or 5 years. The inflammatory condition of humans is at a next level scale that I haven't seen in my career up until the last couple of years. And I could see the direction. You know, I track trends, I track patterns. I've worked with thousands of people. I got thousands of clinical hours. And I've watched these trends shift over the last, you know, 10 plus years, more autoimmune conditions, more inflammatory conditions, nervous system conditions, immune dysregulation. And that just keeps on climbing, and it's getting more into the chronic nature, but it's showing up in younger and younger people. And so that's a lot of what I see. And then you mentioned, you know, toxins, poisons, all those things. Those are more of the cause of the symptom picture. And because I do toxicity profiling and I pay attention to these things, I've been trained a lot with bacteria and viruses and pathogens of all kinds. I got into epigenetics. I got into studying, you know, chemical toxicity and environmental toxins. And from what I've seen over the course of my career is those elements are often very causative and, you know, causing a lot of issues in the body. And when you think of it at a really basic level, the body doesn't like being poisoned. You know, it seems like a simple concept, yeah, but it's true. If you put too much toxins, and we understand that with alcohol, right? We understand that with substances, but there is a lot of substances entering our body right now that are really toxic that aren't in the alcohol category or aren't in the substance abuse category. They're in the high stakes chemical industry categories, and all the additives and foods and these things that enter the body regularly, but a lot of people don't know that they're taking on that much toxicity. And so a lot of these things that didn't used to be a problem, if we think of the invention of plastic the invention of, you know, a lot of the regular petrochemicals and things that are in, you know, soaps and cosmetics and in food and all the preservatives that maybe didn't even exist, you know, 40, 50 years ago. You add a few decades up of putting that into the human population, you're going to see some issues. And it's just because we're built up with too many toxins, you know, things are accumulating. And I don't think that's even up for debate anymore. The debate right now is, well, how much does that impact our bodies? And, you know, it turns out it impacts the bodies a lot. And, you know, that's a huge topic on its own. So I'm seeing a lot of stuff these days in those categories that are very significant.
It's fascinating. So you almost have to be like, it's like solving one big puzzle, right? And it's, how do you, like, I was listening to your podcast on wealth or wisdom and health or what, with Josh Trent, great guy, great podcast. And it was interesting about your method of like, when somebody comes in, sits down and you have like, you sit down and have like a normal conversation like we're having and really just have them be comfortable. And then I resonate with that a lot, because even when take on breathwork clients, it's like, you really got to find, ask questions and allow them to sort of, because you got to look back at their history. It's like, well, you know what? Because a lot of times when they come, they think it's one thing, but it's something else.
Yeah, right. So that's so true.
How does that work for you when somebody comes in? How do you figure out like where to even start? Because I'm sure you see people that come in and have like a whole shitload of issues and it's like, oh, that. Like, how do you, is that intuitively as well as like the practical stuff? Like, how does that work for you?
Yeah, the training we had in school, pretty deductive reasoning. You know, you ask your questions, what's your chief complaint? What's the main thing that brought you in? What other symptoms do you have? And then in Chinese medicine, there's a lot of different things that we get taught to ask that wouldn't necessarily be part of a normal conventional medicine visit with your GP. So we ask about sleep, we ask about energy, we ask about digestion, we ask about mood, mental clarity, brain fog, all of those things. So we might ask a lot of questions. So early in my career, I would ask a lot of questions because I wanted all the data to then synthesize the bigger picture of what was going on and sort of choose the direction. Let's choose the path. Yeah, let's start working on this. And then we'll see how we go. Nowadays, I ask a lot less questions because I've learned how to take in a lot of data by how they walk in the room, how they're sitting there in the waiting room, what I see when I look at their eyes, how they speak, the words they choose, how they're sitting in the chair. And that has become quite intuitive, even though it might be a lot of microsets of data. And then it might ask clarifying questions. And more importantly, I think one of the key points of being a practitioner of any kind, breathwork or facilitating anything, is the listening component. And I feel like that's been lost in medicine to a large degree, because in our conventional system in Canada anyway, the visits are short. It doesn't really matter what type of Western specialist or practitioner you might see. If you're in the system, it's going to be short. If you can get 5 minutes, you're doing good. If you can get 10 minutes, that's kind of unheard of, even in an appointment you've waited 18 months for, as an example. And so when somebody comes in with me, if I'm with them for half an hour, 60 minutes, 90 minutes, 2 or 3 hours, in some cases, I get to know who that person is. And what I'm looking for, especially now at this phase of my career, is I'm listening for the symptoms, but I'm listening underneath that. I'm listening for the spaces in between, and I am using my intuition, but I'm using thousands of hours of sitting with clients to formulate, where's the center of this? What is the central hub that all of these symptoms are connected to? And it doesn't take very long for that picture to emerge now, because I've trained my mind and my body and my skill sets to track that. I'm tracking patterns. So somebody might say, I've got 5 or 10 symptoms, or they might have 50 symptoms. And I'm just holding those lightly of, okay, this is information. All symptoms are the body's way of communicating. So the more symptoms, the more data sets of communication you have, that it's like I'm almost entering into a dialogue with the person's body. because patients also say things. And like you said, they may say, hey, this is my issue. This is even why I have the issue. I know what's going on. You got to help me with this. That might not be true. It might be completely connected to something else. And through time and listening and asking the right questions, there's a picture that starts to emerge and they'll have an insight of, oh my God, I never even thought of that. Oh yeah, that's impacting everything. And I'm like, all right, we just got our hands on the root here. Let's focus on that. And if we focus on the root properly, often all of the symptoms will start to take care of themselves. I'm not going to go chasing fires. You'll never get done. You just, you know, it's like whack-a-mole. You just, all right, we got that symptom under control. Now let's go over here and go over here. And that's a lot of what's happening with patients nowadays is they're going to see specialists. They're going to see a lot of different practitioners to try and work on one symptom or one issue within that paradigm. But they're missing the interconnectedness of how all of that is related, because our bodies are one whole system. There's nothing separate in our system at all. And when we start to look at it that way, and we go back to the garden analogy, maybe the soil's dried out because nobody's watered it, you know? And that one answer, that one modality I might suggest for them as a solution might actually bring the entire garden back online again.
How damaged do you see people come in that have been on a ton of medications, like their gut and everything? And how do you deal with someone that comes in and is part of the system of taking this for that, and then they got this for that and this for that, and it's just a never ending thing? Like how do you deal with somebody that comes to you and's like, look, I've tried everything, I've been on these medications, like what the fuck do I do? Like how does it even work?
Well, maybe let's use an example and go back to us as hockey players. So let's say you get a bunch of injuries, you get banged up. I've separated my shoulders multiple times, dislocations and stuff, and it's not fun. So you're in pain, you want to keep playing, or you're just in pain in general. So yeah, you get an anti-inflammatory. Some class, you know, NSAIDs, some kind of anti-inflammatory, maybe you get a prescription, maybe just go hit up the drugstore and you start taking it. It's not going to be very long before your liver and your organs get impacted, either mildly, you know, and your body may still be able to sort it out, but it starts to impact the gut. There's so much research now that points to NSAIDs and some of the medications that are anti-inflammatory category, how damaged they are to our gut flora and our microbiome. When you start impacting that, guess what? It starts impacting the immune system and it starts affecting your mind. Because we have the vagus nerve connection, the gut is known as the second brain. It actually might be more like the first brain. Our immune system is about 80% regulated by our gut, maybe even more. That's just current research. So when you start messing with the gut, a lot of changes happen. So let's say, you know, you start getting a little bit tired and your digestion feels a little bit off. You stop absorbing minerals and nutrients and vitamins from the food that you're eating. That leads to a further decline in maybe your clarity. Maybe you start getting a bit brain fog and you're not as focused out on the ice. Your stamina is not quite as good. Your heart rate's up a little bit and you're a little slower than you normally would be, but maybe you can push through it for a while, but maybe you still have inflammation and pain. Once your gut starts getting leaky or inflamed, maybe you start having a bit of food sensitivities. And so the food you're taking in, it starts, you know, creating this inflammatory response in the body, and that starts disrupting your sleep. You're waking up at night with like kind of a tummy ache or indigestion. Maybe over time you start getting a bit of acid reflux and heartburn. Then you're going back to the doc and saying, doc, I got heartburn. And if they're not necessarily educating you or paying attention to what's going on, that it was the anti-inflammatories that they gave you, guess what? Maybe now you're getting an acid blocker, acid reducing medication, which actually seems to compound digestive dysfunction over time. And now, before you've known it, over months or a few years, you're now in a chronic inflammatory state in your body. And now all your joints hurt. And now you actually don't sleep very well. And guess what? Now you need a sleep medication. Otherwise, you can't sleep. And pretty soon, a decade can go by and somebody's health is in, you know, quite significant decline. And the root issue has still never been sorted. So when I see cases like this, which is all the time, I now know the path. I know the track record. Where did this begin? When did you first get your medication? what was going on in your life then? And I start piecing together why they went for the medication in the first place. And so I know, hey, well, there's going to be some repair needed here. Let's start at the top of the pile and start working our way back. So we often start reversing that whole scenario. Let's get the gut back online. Let's start decreasing inflammation. Oh, look at this. Your liver, your filtration, detox pathways are completely stuck. No wonder you can't get rid of anything. And the cup is full. Let's start offloading that. So I might work on somebody's liver for a little while and give them lymphatic support. And you start to open up the machine, you know, you open up the body a little bit and suddenly their toxic load comes down a bit. Their inflammation comes down a little bit. The energy starts coming up and say, hey, you're sleeping better. Hey. And they're like, well, yeah. And like, you know, talk to your doctor about, do you need that same medication load? Maybe you can reduce the dose. And as you start doing that, you start to reverse that whole pathway and that whole cascade that happened. And eventually, in lots and lots of cases, people are off all the medications that they were on when they originally came in, and they feel way healthier than they did previous. Those are what I consider like successful treatment.
You know, what comes to me, I think, why isn't this just the protocol in general? In it, like, why is it anything else? You know, from like, well, actually thinking about it, like the human's got a problem. Like, why not try and fix the thing? Like, what you're saying, I'm like, yeah, obviously. Like, what you're saying is making total sense. And it's like, well, why isn't it like that? Like, why isn't everything like that? Why are doctors taught that? Like, why is it any different? That must drive you crazy, because you're literally just like, you're just going back and fixing all the BS that's been done to them. It's like you're.
I do feel, thanks for naming that. I have often felt like I'm cleaning up a lot of messes, you know, and I'm human and I do get tired of it sometimes. And I feel, and it's not against any of the patients, they just didn't know.
Yeah.
And if nobody taught them, how would they know? You can't get mad at somebody for not knowing something. And I do sometimes have some frustration of like, oh my goodness, this person's on 6 medications. How did this happen? And then we go back through the history and I'll sit there and listen because I want to know how it happened so that I can understand how to best be of service to them. And a lot of patients have goals of, I don't want to be on this medication. I don't feel good. The side effects are crazy. Is there a better way? And often the answer is yes, there is a better way. But if they got onto a particular pathway and never saw anybody that thinks in a different way, like me, they're on that path and they might get quite stuck in it. And so once we start deconstructing that, a lot of my time is spent educating people and informing them, hey, you might want to look at this. You might want to read about that. I don't have all the answers, but go and find some answers for yourself and I'll point you in the right direction. And sure, ask me anything you want. So, you know, at the end of the day, when we distill things down, I think this goes back in some ways to our values and belief systems and our culture, that we've been a bit conditioned to see symptoms as bad. And to get rid of your symptoms at all costs. If you have some pain, you got to get rid of that. If you got a fever, you got to get rid of that. When really that's information from the body and the body's wisdom is producing that. If you sprain your ankle, it's going to get swollen and inflamed. That's your body's wisdom because that's how it actually fixes itself. So if we actually try and get rid of that local inflammation too quickly, it won't heal. You're actually forcing the body to go against what it's actually trying to do. I'm not saying we can't regulate it, but you can use arnica or acupuncture or massage or these types of things or red light therapy or sauna that don't have a destructive impact on the system that actually enhance your body's ability to heal. And that inflammation will come down organically because it's healing faster. Mm. But if we take too many anti-inflammatories, you're actually stopping the natural cascade of healing and repair that your body's doing. And that's often what leads to re-injury and chronic injuries in a joint is the healing was never allowed to happen fully. We intervened in our wisdom thinking, I know what'll help. Let's get rid of the body's wisdom here. When, you know, even like a fever, if you have a fever, as long as it's maybe not too high, that's too severe. I'm not saying there's not a time and a place for intervention at all. There is. but we often intervene way too quickly with things that suppress the body's natural mechanism of what it's actually trying to do. You know, if you cut yourself, it heals up. We don't have to think about it. The body's amazing. It is a self-repair mechanism. So if we can help the body and give it resources and feed what it needs and let the wisdom, you know, guide the way, then yeah, that's a potent combination for healing. So a big part of it is mindset. Symptoms are not bad inherently. If we're curious about why the symptom is there, then we're getting warmer, then we're getting on the right track, and we can start to address the body in a healthy way where we're not slowing it down, we're actually helping it. And we're not creating more blockage, we're actually unblocking it. And so there's a big mindset around that. And we've been, frankly, we've been marketed to in a big way that we need all these other substances to run our lives in a healthy way, that we can't possibly sort it out not taking some of these things like prescriptions. And again, it doesn't mean there's not a time and a place for things. I'm grateful for anesthetic for my surgery. That would have, you know, really sucked to be back in the Wild West where bite on a stick, here we go, son, you know, try and stay still. So I'm grateful for the surgeons and the mechanisms that allowed that to happen, that I could get the repair I needed. But then I did a lot of repair work on my own to make sure it repaired fully and to clear my liver and my lymph of anesthetic chemical toxicity, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
If you know how to use it properly, you can get the best of both worlds. But that's, I think, where there's a big gap, is we can actually bridge these in a much better way than they're being bridged now.
Yeah, such good points. And I think also a lot of people just underestimate their power in general. Like, think about it. Like, we have this human body and it's a fucking miracle. If we just trust that the thing can heal itself and figure out how that's done. Like, even doing, I mean, I've been to two Dr. Joe Dispenza advanced retreats, and dude, seeing what happens and seeing people walk out of wheelchairs and just the healing that goes on, I was like, okay, it just reinforced the power of the human spirit and the body. And I just feel like we've lost that. And it's like, we outsource our power to, you know, medicine. And I think like what you're doing is so important, because it's like, let's figure this out so that your body can do what it does. Like, let's just allow the body to do what it needs to do. Like, let's get back to the basics of allowing the body to flow properly so that it can heal naturally, and it can just allow itself to work through whatever it needs to, and that these symptoms aren't necessarily bad. It's like, hey, maybe pay attention to this. Like, hey, maybe this needs, you know. And it's one of the things too that I noticed with injuries. And this is where inflammation I really firsthand noticed, because with my shoulder and my ankle over the years, I've noticed flare-ups, and then I've noticed where the pain goes away. And that's not accidental. I look at my diet. If I've been drinking alcohol, if I've been eating sugar, if I had pizza, if I haven't slept, there's these things. And I'm like, oh man, my shoulder, my ankles. I'm like, why is that? And over the years, I've realized, well, what happens if I eliminate that stuff?
Yeah.
And even if I do a fast, or I go in the sauna, or I just eliminate the interference, well, what happens? The pain goes away. And a lot of people don't seem to understand that sometimes the things that they're putting into their body is causing so much of the problem. And it's like, almost like, it's not about adding more. It's like, what can we eliminate first? Like, what can we just take out? And just, and I've noticed that for me, I'm like, okay, why is this happening? What, you know? And I always want to look at what I did or what I've been putting in my body, just to take responsibility for it and just realize, okay, that's interesting. Let's just, you know, I got this. And I feel like we've lost that ability to trust ourselves and just look at what can we do, you know, and how can we trust our body more. And I think what you're doing is so important to give people that trust again, you know, that realization that they can work through these things, they can heal themselves.
Well, and that's the empowering part of a movement of, I think, what we both see. I've been to a Joe Dispenza event myself, and you know, it really aligns with what I've come to believe about the body, because I've seen miraculous things happen in my clinic and my practice over the years of the strength and the potency and the capacity of our bodies to not only handle massive amounts of toxins and still get by, but when you start eliminating things and clearing somebody's system out, that inherent wisdom and power of the system comes online even more. And then you can really see that momentum affect somebody's life. And once they understand that, they become pretty unstoppable and they start to see things in a new way with a new mindset. And they'll more likely take self-responsibility for anything that is going on in their life ahead of like symptoms and things too, just what's happening in their business. What's happening in their relationship? You know, maybe it's not the other person's fault, like we'd like to believe all the time. And so I think there is this movement of the inherent wisdom is being unlocked in a lot of people right now, which is, I think, in part why Dr. Joe Dispenza's events and retreats have become so popular, is because this is actually built into us already. It's just been covered up. And then we're actually remembering ourselves back to more of the true essence of like, oh yeah, there was a time maybe as a kid, like, you actually knew that inherently, and you can bring this wisdom back online and start stripping away all the BS and everything else that, oh man, I'm a powerhouse. I can actually address way more in my life, and I can actually influence my health way more than what I thought. And rather than being in the disempowered sort of victim state of, I can't do anything, I'm stuck with this thing. And it's like, well, if you talk to somebody that's walked out of a wheelchair through a few days of doing some deep processing and meditation and addressing their grief and mentally emotional imbalances or wounds or traumas or experiences, and then they're walking around, tell that person that they're not powerful. You know, totally. They don't need to debate it. They know. And so I think there is a wave that's expanding. You know, it seems kind of slow at times, but I know it's there, that people are taking their power back. They're realizing they have a big influence on their life, that they're not victims to every little thing that comes across their plate. And that also extends to the physical body. The physical body can heal. When we line up everything else, suddenly the body's, you know, it can come online in such a powerful way. It is miraculous, actually.
Yeah. And I think it's so important that you're doing what you're doing and getting out there and doing like podcasts and events, because I think people need to have somebody that they can relate to. Like, because normally Chinese medicine or anything that is usually over there, it's not what we do here. It's hard for, even with yoga or breath work, it's hard for people to want to jump on that if they can't relate with that person. Right. But when you see somebody that's like, oh, he's just like me, it's like he gets it. He's like got this good energy about him, like you do. I think it's really important, because then it's going to bring down that like barrier that people have towards it. And they're seeing someone like you doing it and want to maybe take that step. Right. And it's like, for me, I needed that. My first person that I was, it for me, was like Aubrey Marcus years ago. I was like, this dude's talking about things that I've never heard a guy like him talk about. And I was like, oh, it's like we're looking for permission slips all over the place from people.
Yeah, we are.
Right. And it's like, oh, well, maybe I could do that. And I think what you're doing, and I think it's so important, because it is something that is still foreign to people. But if they have someone that they can connect to, it's going to allow them to want to explore that, because if they don't connect to you, they're not even going to allow themselves to open up to the possibilities, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And how much do we see that in our society in general, not just in health, not just in medicine, but in lots of places where we, you know, we stay closed off to something until, you know, we have a good coach or a mentor or a friend or somebody in your circle that suddenly is doing something different and it's working for them, then we might ask, hey, what'd you do? How'd that happen? You were like this and now you're like this. Something changed. And I think that's where the curiosity that we can have, and that's a philosophy of mine, I would say a big value in my life, is being curious about anything, especially people that have contrary views to me. I want to be curious as, who are they? How did they come to arrive at that? I arrived in my life with different thoughts and opinions because of my story. So they they have their story too. What is that? And if we can be curious, we can sit in the same room together and actually have love and admiration and respect for each other, even if we don't agree. And I think that's something that's kind of been lost too. Everything just gets so polarized. If you have a differing opinion of somebody, it's like, you're wrong, I'm right, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And that leads to a lot more separation and not connection. And I think that's one of the reasons I love my work. I love doing events and retreats and, you know, connecting with people like you as well of let's chat about this stuff.
Yeah.
Let's get curious and let's have a conversation and see what can emerge from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The ability to listen to others, it's like a whole other thing, man. Like, yeah, interesting. Like, why do you think that way? Because every time you do that, like, that's why I even have interviewing people and having conversations. But I even learned that from working in the bar industry for years. It's like, interesting. Everybody's a teacher. Like, everybody has a perspective and a unique life path. And they may know a lot more about other shit than I know about a lot of shit, you know? And it's like, if you can really open yourself up to that and be like, man, everybody's a teacher. What can I learn? That's so interesting. It just gives you such a wider range perspective of life. And it's like, but yeah. So many people are like, no, this is the way I think. This is what it is. And it's all you're doing is closing yourself up to possibilities that you could potentially learn and grow from, right? And
yeah, I think it's absolutely
super important, man. So, okay, towards wrapping this up in the next, you know, little bit here, I want to kind of give people a little bit of a roadmap. So let's say somebody's going through some physical adversity, just in their body, their mind, they're struggling. What would you recommend? Maybe three things that somebody should do, whether it's eliminate something, add something. What is something that they can start with that if they're just feeling low energy, maybe moody, depressed, like what would you recommend for them to start?
I would say to wrap your head around that being uncomfortable is a gift that's full of opportunity. And that to address something meaningful or change something actually in your life, you're probably going to need to get past discomfort. You're going to need to let go of some level of certainty that you don't know where your life is going to lead. And, you know, you said it earlier already, we get so closed off to ideas. And if it's a foreign idea or something different than what we already think, we might auto just block that out. So if people could do an inventory of their life, if they have, you know, chronic low back pain or frozen shoulder, it could be anything, you know, gut disturbance. So you take any, you know, any issue that somebody's having that is not resolving, I would say you got to slow down. We're going way too fast. And the nervous system gets very overwhelmed and very dysregulated when we're going way too fast without integrating our experiences. And so one of the ways to do that, even in Chinese medicine philosophy, you got to slow down. So if somebody is willing to take a moment in a day or an evening or an afternoon and sit down with a piece of paper and take an inventory of what are the issues going on in my body right now? Or what are the issues going on with my mental, emotional life? I'm depressed. I'm anxious. I'm overwhelmed. Okay, write it down. And then start taking an inventory of how long have I been feeling this way? And start pulling that thread back on your own. Oh, that kind of started last couple of years when I got laid off from my job. Oh, I was unemployed for 2 or 3 months and I was scared I wasn't going to be able to pay rent and, you know, getting triggered into these survival mechanisms. Oh my goodness, that even though I got a new job and I, you know, I got myself going again and I'm not feeling that now, that energetic imprint may still be there. And when you take an inventory of your life, you may find if you're willing to take the time and slow down and look at it, you might discover all kinds of different things, even in the last 6 months, that are taking up energy in your space. You're leaking energy in those places. You know, where are you feeling the most stressed in your life right now? And just be honest with yourself. It might be with your spouse. It might be with your boss. It might be with your job. And a lot of people will not look at those places because they're scared about what it means. You know, oh, I'm 5 years away from my pension, but I hate my job and I'm miserable. I'm just going to stick it out. you may not know the cost of that impact to your health, your life, your vibrancy, your creativity, depending on how you feel about it. And so a lot of people won't look at that because they don't want to look at that they may need to actually change something. So getting comfortable with change, and yes, it might be uncomfortable. If you can even sit with that for a short time, then you're going to be willing to look at the truth of what's happening. Because what I've also found is people often know what they need to change. They either just don't know how to change, or they don't know where they're going next, and it's too scary. But they actually know. And I have experienced that in my own life many times. I knew what I needed to change. I was just terrified to do it. And I needed to cultivate a greater sense of my own confidence and character and clarity to be able to make the decisions that I knew I needed to make for years. And noticing the cost of not making some of those decisions was starting to impact me in a big way, and people around me, that it wasn't just about me. And so if we can look at where we need to change it, even if you don't do anything about it, take a step and allow yourself to actually see what's there. And that can change everything.
Self-reflection. People don't,
you know, we've got these great minds, right? We've got skills. We've got access to tools. We can do breath work. We can do meditation. We know what tools are available. Doesn't mean we're using them necessarily. And it's usually because we're avoiding something.
Ain't that the truth? Speak to us about your event you got coming up as well. The new human event. You got some amazing people. I love it. I'm seeing it pop up. And then your new, the new human experience podcast. Speak to us a little bit about that, man. Like, what's going on with that, and what can people expect?
Yeah, the event's coming up in October 4th to 6th, 2024 in Enderby, BC, which is off the beaten track just enough, but still very accessible. A lot of people that are coming are flying into Kelowna. Enderby's north of Vernon, so it's about an hour from the Kelowna airport there. But yeah, I live in the Vernon area, and so it's in my backyard here. We're hosting in the First Nations Community Center called the Splat Scene, and the local community there has been very gracious and beautiful to work with. I'm so honored that we get to facilitate together and co-create together with that community. And this event, first and foremost, is a healing event. That's kind of the undercurrent of everything that I do. I want it to be healing. I want it to be of service. And what I've noticed, if we want to really create an impact in somebody's life in a powerful way, we got to have total immersion. And so, not that miracles can't happen in a 1 hour visit or a 1 hour session, but I became very interested in doing longer visits with more people. So what could we do in 1 day together? What could we do in 2 days together? What could we do in 3 days together? And so this event is like 2.5, 3 days. If you do the full experience, you can still come for the Saturday and Sunday. For those that want to start with us, it's called the Wild Heart Experience. And part of the ethos of that, you know, the event is called the New Human Regeneration. We're looking at how do we regenerate our lives in a really powerful way on every level, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, in relationship aspects, because these are the places that often get overlooked. So we are going to address the lesser addressed places of our lives, and we're going to give you tools and experiences to access those places within, but also to share in proximity to other people that are interested in doing the same thing. So everybody that's coming, and people that are going to be coming more, they're interested in growth. They're interested in addressing the things that are not being like fully realized in their life. They may have some health issues. They may have some healing they want to do, or they might be feeling really good and they want to find their soul family. You know, they want to connect in a really deep way at a heart level with community that is interested in changing this planet, that's interested in bringing humanity to a new level. And so that's a little bit of the ethos there. And then the Wild Heart Experience specifically that starts on Friday. This is in part, we've been talking about this, is like, where have we got stuck and forgotten the wisdom of our heart and the excitement of how much actually is here for us to be alive on this planet? And so we want to bring that wildness back into the body and let that heart open and expand in a really powerful way that maybe awakens dormant gifts in your system, that maybe awakens things that have been long forgotten that are actually really important to you, but you've got so much clutter going on that you forgot about it. So we're going to be diving really deeply into the system, especially around the heart that day, to uncover that and unearth that, because I think that's going to have a huge impact on the planet. And certainly with some of the guests that we've got coming, I've been a big fan of Dr. Zach Bush for many years. He's coming to Little Enderby. And
he's amazing.
Remarkable human being. And I feel really honored that he said yes to the invitation to work with us up here. And so Zach is going to be speaking on all 3 days. And actually, Charles Eisenstein, who's a good friend of Zach's, he's going to be speaking on all 3 days as well. And these are the places that we're going to address humanity. We're going to address our individual, you know, natures as humans. But there's a bigger collective vibe going on with this event that we know we're going to impact the planet. We're going to create some ripples and waves. And I know a lot of people say that with events and experiences, but I've facilitated enough of these that I can feel the energy coming through, because we've been building it for months and months, and we're building it on top of the ones that we've done in the past. We've got other amazing speakers diving into relationships, sacred relating. We're going to be activating our voices. We have First Nations healing ceremony planned as well that everybody gets to participate in. And as I say that, I can feel the energy move through my body, and I just feel so blessed to be involved with, you know, creating these events and the land that we're going to be on, and that we all get to come together, regardless of what your past is, what walk of life you've been walking. But if you want to change something and experience something that's going to help elevate and raise that frequency in your body and in your heart, that, you know, that's what we're going to be doing. So yeah, lots going into that. And there is still tickets available there. You know, we're filling up for sure. There's a lot of people coming from all over the place, all across Canada, the US, other countries as well. And it's a really cool experience to see where people are coming from to attend this event. And a lot of them are doctors, practitioners, healers, guides, you know, people that are really, you know, leading in their own way and influencing a lot of different people on their pathway. And I love serving that community too. Like, guides and leaders and practitioners, anybody that's holding space for a lot of other people, they need somewhere to go too. Who's holding space for them? What opportunities do they need to actually continue their healing journey? Because the more they go on that journey themselves, the greater impact they can have on the people they are holding space for and the people that they're being of service for. So there's a lot of people in the room that will be a lot of the leadership, I think, of what's happening in our society. And I'm really excited to be serving that community as well.
Yeah, that's great, man. Those events are so powerful. Like, anybody that hasn't been to an event, you got to go, because being in that room with that collective energy and, you know, all of it going on, you know, the highs and the lows is just so, it's so, there's no way to replicate it. Like, you have to experience it. And yeah, I can only imagine how good your event's going to be, man. I'll have to get to one day. I'm going to be in Bali, but I look forward to seeing it, what you're doing online. I've just been like, man, this dude's like got some good shit going on. So,
brother.
And well done.
Yeah, thank you. Well, in the podcast that I've got started now, you mentioned, you know, the new human experience. It's kind of been born out of this event in some ways. Even, you know, I've been in the clinic for over 15 years. So the podcast is kind of steeped in that experience and, you know, all the different wisdom nuggets I've learned along the way. And then getting to interview really cool human beings is something I love. I love connecting. I'm really enjoying connecting with you. I've been able to be on a lot of podcasts now, and then being in the driver's seat a little bit more as a podcast host has been really enjoyable, that I get to reach out to people and invite them into the space. And so, yeah, we've got a good couple handfuls of episodes out and more to come. And I'm excited to see where that journey goes. And in a really organic way, I don't have a set schedule. I'm not looking to put a podcast out like twice a week, every week forever. I'm really just following my own natural rhythm and flow of what opportunities come up and who I get to connect with. And then we release them as they come up. And yeah, it's been an exciting journey so far.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it, man, because it can become a lot if you're always interviewing people. It's great, but you want to keep that passion, especially if you got a lot of things going on. I noticed that, you know, over the years, you know, it takes a lot of energy to keep interviewing people over and over, especially if you're going deep. And if you're doing your clinical stuff, it's like you can only hold so much, yeah. Right? So you want to keep that fun, you know, that excitement of it. So that's awesome, man. Is there anything else you want to leave everybody walk away with today, or what do you got?
Yeah, I think we're at a really exciting time. And I know it might be a challenging time for some on the planet, and I'm just as human as everybody else. I go through my challenges, I go through my shadows, I go through my low points, but I can also see how they serve me. And so I'm really excited about this transformational time for the collective of humanity. And I think that's the thing about being in rooms where there's a bigger energy that's able to be accessed and tapped into more than what we normally have access to by ourselves. And so I would encourage people to dive into communities more, to connect with the people around you, to get curious about what makes other humans tick. And especially if you're triggered or if you're, you know, in that mode of separation of making yourself right and wrong and all these things around polarity, soften into that frequency of being curious and know that that person has had a journey just like you have. And if we are more open and accepting of that and putting ourselves in healthy community spaces together, there is infinite capacity for us to transform anything we want. And, you know, we get to create the world that we want to live in. And so I'm encouraging everybody to take some action on that. Don't sit on the sidelines in your own life. You're the main character in your story. So, you know, take those steps, even if it requires a leap of faith into the unknown. In my experience, that's where the most magic happens.
Love it. Bro, thanks so much for coming on, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation and yeah, great connecting.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Great episode. So much there. Make sure to follow Dr. Kevin on Instagram. Check out his website, all the information below. And most importantly, if you get the opportunity to go in person, check out the new Human Regeneration, the upcoming live event, October 4th to 6th, coming up very soon. He's also got his podcast, The New Human Experience, which is linked below as well. So go check him out. If you can't make this event, he's doing great things. He's got great content, his website, lots of amazing things to come. And as always, I appreciate you guys. If you got value from this, please leave us a review or share it with somebody who need it. But most importantly, hit that subscribe or that follow button so that you don't have to ever think about an episode. It just gets downloaded right away. All right, everybody. Much love. We'll catch you next time.